Okay, so it's payoff time for all the work we've put in on quantum mechanics. We finally are going to get to understanding how reactions work. And that is what constitutes functional groups. And one of the simplest is hydrogen fluoride. So let's look at the orbitals that are involved in hydrogen fluoride. There are four valence pairs of electrons, the core on fluorine plus seven more on fluorine and one on hydrogen, seven valence orbital electrons of fluorine. So five valence orbitals are available, S and three P's on fluorine and the one S on hydrogen. So we can make five molecular orbitals, and four of them will have pairs of electrons in them. Okay, there's the lowest one. What's it made of? What's the main component of the lowest molecular orbital? It's the 2s of fluorine, but it's got a little knob on it, so a little bit of the hydrogen is in there, but mostly it's 2s on fluorine. Okay. Now, how about the next one? What's it mostly? Renshi, what do you think? Yeah, it's mostly the 2p on fluorine, with, again, a little bit more on the left and the right, so there's a little bit of 1s in there. And maybe there's a little bit of the 2s in the upper one and a little bit of the 2p in the bottom one, a little bit of mixing, but not much. Okay. And then what's coming next? Can you tell? Tell me. It's going to be these two orbitals that are what? They're the same energy. Dre, what do you say? Can't hear very well. Yeah, they're the other 2p's of fluorine, and they don't overlap with the hydrogen, right? So they just stand alone. Okay, so those are the 2p's. And those are the HOMOs, four valence pairs, right? So we've made it. And then there's one more molecular orbital, which is what's left over after all the other stuff we've done. We haven't used much of the 1s of hydrogen. Why haven't we used much of the 1s of hydrogen yet? Derek? Right. It's much higher in energy than the fluorine orbitals. Right? The fluorine atom orbitals, because of the high nuclear charge, are much lower. So what's left over is that, plus a little bit of the 2s and a little bit of the 2p. So there's a little bit of the fluorine in there, whatever was left over from making the bottom two. So those three are made from three atomic orbitals, the 2s of fluorine, the 2p that's along the bond of fluorine, and the 1s of hydrogen. And they're all mixed in there, but mostly the bottom one is 2s, the middle one is 2p, and the top one is the 1s of hydrogen, mostly. Okay. And a little bit of an sp hybrid on fluorine. There's another picture drawn a long time ago, 36 years ago, using a different program, but the same general idea. And you can see there are nodes in this orbital, right? In fact, it's the molecular sort of 2s orbital, right? It's got that circular node around the red thing in the middle. But let's look at the nodes. There's a node there, right? Now, is that node a node that comes from the atom, from the atoms it's made from, or is it a node that's anti-bonding between the two atoms? Sharif? It's anti-bonding, right? It's one sign on hydrogen, opposite on the fluorine. So that topmost orbital is anti-bonding the same way that the bottom two are bonding. Okay, so that's an anti-bonding node. Now, how about this node here? Is that anti-bonding? Sunny? Is the blue node anti-bonding? Pardon me? No, it's an it's just because if you look at the top right picture up there, it's the node that comes with the sp hybrid that you use of fluorine. It's not anti-bonding, it just happens to be there because of what atomic orbital you're using. So it's important in understanding bonding to distinguish between nodes that are anti-bonding and nodes that are just part of the atomic orbital you're making things out of. Okay, now let's look at fluorine on methyl, so methyl fluoride. Okay, now you have 7 valence pairs of electrons, so there'll be 7 occupied orbitals, and there they are. So, and they're the HOMOs. Now, let's just look at these two, and we'll draw those older pictures of them in order to be able to see the nodes a little more clearly. Now, in the bottom one, there's a node. Is that an anti-bonding node? Or is that a node that comes with the atomic orbitals that things are made out of? Mustafa, what do you say? Right, you can see on the left that it's a p orbital of fluorine that has that node. In fact, that node passes through the nuclei of both fluorine and carbon. Right, so there's a p orbital of carbon that's involved, a p orbital that's fluorine involved, and also orbitals on the hydrogens a little bit. Okay? Now, in the top one, so that's an atomic orbital node, AON. Right? How about that one? That's also an AON. In fact, it's the same atomic orbital node. In fact, those two orbitals, the top and the bottom one shown there, are... Oh, but wait, there's one more node in the top one. How about that one? Antibonding or... Right, that's antibonding, right, between the fluorine and the carbon. Okay, now... These are made, you see, of both of these molecular orbitals are made of a p orbital on fluorine and the carbon and the hydrogens. So it's actually made of CH sigma bonds, right, plus the fluorine orbital. Okay, now we can use those two pictures. The bottom one is the favorable combination of those two, of the fluorine with the CH. And the top one is the unfavorable combination. It has the antibonding node. Now, which one has the lower energy, do you think? The p orbital on fluorine or the sigma bonds of CH? Right? Fluorine obviously starts lower, has a higher nuclear charge. But the C and H mixed and gave sigma, right? So it's down too. So the question is, which is more important? Right? Is it more important to have the bigger nuclear charge of fluorine, or is it more important to have the overlap that you had in CH? Right? Now, can you see how to use these pictures to tell which one is lower in energy, the fluorine or the CH? Mike? The lower one, the lower molecular orbital is certainly lower in energy than the upper one. But that's not because the upper one's antibonding and made of the same pieces. That's clear. Okay. But the problem is, of the pieces that went to make it together, which are the p orbital of fluorine and sigma of CH, which of those two is lower of the pieces that went to make these? You see what I'm asking? The question is about energy match, right, of these things that are coming together here, either favorably on below or unfavorably above. Okay, well, here's how you can look at it. There are the atomic orbitals, that's clear. We know that C and H are about the same, and fluorine is obviously more stable. But the C and H got together with a certain amount of overlap, and the question is, was there enough overlap to make sigma CH lower than fluorine was? Or is fluorine still lower? Can you see how to tell? Yeah.
Well, since we form an antibond, fluorine is the antibond.
I can't hear very well.
The fluorine p bond gets antibond first. I would think it's the antibond is lower energy than the antibond of CH. Therefore, the fluorine is higher energy in the bonding sense than CH.
Did everybody hear? I didn't hear clearly enough. Let's run again.
Since on the second diagram, we get an antibonding orbit.
Right.
Therefore, the pi bond in the antibonding orbital diagram is lower energy than the CH one. Therefore,
wait a second. You mean that this orbital is lower than F? Is that what you're saying? We're going to take these two and put them together. Actually, there's several of these, right? There was this CH, that CH, and that CH. All of them are in here, okay? But now we're mixing these, actually three of these, with this to make new orbitals. We're going to make this one, and we're going to make that one, okay? Now, my question is, this came down because of overlap. Which is higher, this or that? And your answer is, or your suggestion? Or that wasn't what you were suggesting? Okay, Sonny?
I'm thinking the CH bond is lower.
Why?
Because if when you combine those two orbitals together, the orbital looks kind of more like the CH.
Aha. Right. Did everybody get that? When you mix two orbitals that aren't matched in energy, the better one looks more like the lower one. The favorable mixture looks more like the lower energy than it does like the higher energy. Right? So if one of them is much more, if one of these two orbitals that you're mixing to make these sum and difference, if one of them is lower than the other, it will predominate in the favorable combination, and the other one will predominate in the unfavorable combination, the one that's antibonding, right? But when you look here, there's not much difference, right, between how much fluorine and how much CH is in these. Yeah. Is which diagram accurate? This one here? No, because the question is, we knew this went down. The question is, how far did it go down? Is it below or above fluorine? That's the question we're asking. Okay? Now, so they're about the same, right? Because if one was much more favorable than the other, it would be in the lower one, right? But they're about the same. But to the extent they're not the same, which one is lower? If you compare how much P of fluorine there is in this one with how much P of fluorine there is in this one, compared to how much CH there is in the two, which one do you think has more CH in it? Kathy? The bottom one or the top one? Is it clear what I'm asking? So do you, can you get a visual impression here? The bottom one has more CH in it than the top one does, but just by a hair. So mostly they're equal, right? The amount of stabilization you got by overlap in the CH bond just about makes up for the difference in the nuclear charge of fluorine. But to the extent there's a difference, this is just a little bit lower than that, which is why I drew it that way. You asked if it was accurate. It's not numerically accurate, but it's true that it's a little bit lower. But just a hair. Okay? Yeah, Seven?
I'm sorry, what is the top and bottom diagram?
These two orbitals, I'm drawing again with a different program, right? And what they are is mixtures of the same two localized orbitals, right? One is the p orbital on fluorine, the other is CH on the methyl group, right? This is the favorable combination where they have favorable overlap. This is the one that has a node. So these two came together and mixed and gave this. Right, and this one has a little bit more CH in it than that one does, and a little less fluorine than that one does. So it must be that this is a little bit lower than that. Sagar?
How do we know that the top node is an antibonding node?
This one? Because it goes through the bond. Right? That if you, to the extent there are electrons here, they hold these two things together. This is the overlap region between the fluorine and the CH. Okay? But the same thing here is exactly opposite, right? It's opposite signs. We're depleting electrons in this region halfway between the two atoms that are being bonded, right? So this one is antibonding. If there were electrons in there, they'd be lower in energy if they come apart. Okay? Because that's an antibonding node. Okay, and notice that this pair on the right is exactly the same as the pair on the left, except it's rotated 90 degrees. So it's the other p orbital and other sigma CH. Okay? And finally, let's look at the LUMO, which we haven't looked at before yet, which I hadn't shown you before. So this is the low LUMO. Now let's look at the nodes in that. There's a node. Is that an atomic orbital node or an antibonding node? That's an atomic orbital on fluorine, okay. Here's another one. Sagar, since you had trouble before, can you tell us what that is? Is that antibonding between fluorine and carbon, or is it just an atomic orbital node? Is it clear where it's going? Can't hear very well. Yeah, it's antibonding. It cuts through the bond. right? It's in question. So that's an antibonding node, and there's one more node there. How about that one? Anybody got an idea? Sharif?
Is that also antibonding?
No, because it goes right through the carbon, right? You can see it up here as well. This is mostly a p orbital of carbon. See that? So the node between this blue and this red is the one that goes through the carbon nucleus. So just as the hydrogen combined with F in HF, here the carbon is combining with that. Okay? So that one's an atomic orbital node. There's only one that's going through the bond. Okay? Now, that's a low LUMO. Is it unusually low? Yes. Now, yeah, Isa, or yes, Kevin? Could be. We'll see that shortly. But there isn't here. Not in this case. There's just one antibody. Although, you know, let's see. No, this one doesn't involve the hydrogen significantly. It could, that blue one could have been, it's in a region of the molecule where it might be antibonding between C and H, but it's not such, there's not enough H there to show that, so I don't think so. Okay, now, is this one unusually low? Can you see any factors that would make this vacant orbital low in energy, unusually? What do you look for? What are factors that make an orbital unusually low? Robin, you have... Okay, are they mismatched? Yeah, absolutely. Fluorine's much lower. Before, we were talking about a sigma CH compared to fluorine. Now we're just talking about a p orbital on carbon compared to fluorine. No contest. So they're mismatched in energy. Derek? Let's see. So let's look at it here. Here's... So there's... Compared to what? Compared to sigma star CH, is it low, right? And we see that because of the energy mismatch, which Robin said, that the fluorine is way down here compared to where hydrogen was. Therefore, sigma star CF is going to be low compared to CH, sigma star CH. So it's unusually low compared to our standard. Okay? Now, the same thing was true in HF. Right? It was unusually low. And in fact, if you look at those and you turn the one on the right 180 degrees, right, it looks very similar to the one on the left, except that you don't have that second blue node, the p orbital on carbon, because you're using a 1s of hydrogen instead. Those are the same orbitals practically in the two molecules. So let's try to make an analogy in how those two unusually low LUMOs react. Now, there's HF, and that's its unusually low LUMO. H on the right, F on the left. Okay? Now, OH base is going to react with this acid. It has a high HOMO, right? So it will use its, it will share its electrons with this low LUMO and make a new bond. Now, here's a question. Well, first, a note that just, or a reminder, we've talked about this before, but curved arrows aren't showing how atoms move. They're showing where we're moving electrons to be out of one place into another. They're moving out of being an unshared pair and into being a bond in this case. Okay, but that aside, from what direction should OH minus approach this LUMO in order to get the best overlap, so you're forming the strongest new bond? Should it approach from what o'clock? Should it approach from 12 o'clock, from 1 o'clock, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock? What direction should it come from? What direction do you think? It should come from 3 o'clock, right? As far, you know, that's where this orbital is big, and you don't want to attack from something like 11 o'clock. Right, or from 9 o'clock. 3 o'clock is going to be the best. Okay, so it'll come in from that direction and put electrons and share its electrons with this orbital. Now, this orbital has an antibonding node. Right, it's a sigma star orbital. there's the antibonding node between fluorine and hydrogen. Now, what's the effect of putting electrons into that orbital?
Yeah. Increase the energy.
Yeah, what effect does it have on the force between H and F? It reduces it. It might even make it repulsive. Right? So what else is going to happen besides forming this new bond? Right? You're going to break the other bond, the pre-existing bond. Right? Those electrons are going to go on to the fluorine. Actually, the electrons that were in the bond that were shared between hydrogen and fluorine at the beginning, mostly on fluorine, they're going to go all on to fluorine. Okay? Because we're going to break this bond. Okay, so that's going to be the product, water and F minus. Eli, you look like you have trouble with that. What's the problem?
Why does the bond break?
Because this orbital that we're putting electrons into is anti-bonding between H and F. So it's going to overcome the strength of the original bond between H and F. So now H is going to go away from F, and it's going to take a lot, or F is going to go away from H, which has been attacked by the OH. Right? And it's going to take those electrons that were mostly its already. Right? Okay. So that we call an acid-base reaction. Obviously, notice that HF is an acid here because it has a low LUMO. It's not because it gives H+. In fact, in truth, H+ never exists here in this reaction. It didn't first break the bond to give H+, and then bond the H+ with OH-. It started forming the bond with OH-, and as it broke the other bond. Right? So there was never H+ never came into the equation. Okay, so besides creating a new bond, mixing the HOMO with a LUMO can break a bond too, wherever that LUMO has an anti-bonding node, okay, as it did here. Okay, so it's a question not just of make a bond, but make and break simultaneously because of these anti-bonding nodes in the LUMOs. Okay, now suppose we compare this to a reaction of CH3F. Okay. Now, look at the top. I've superimposed CH3F LUMO on the HF, and it looks almost exactly the same, except that, of course, CH3 looks different from H. So if I move it over there, you can see how very similar they looked. Right? So where do you think you're going to attack this LUMO with OH minus? There. It's exactly the same idea. Okay, so OH minus will come and share. And now what effect will that have on other bonds? You'll make this new bond between carbon and OH minus. But where is there an antibonding node? There's a node here. Is that an antibonding node? No, that's a node of the carbon, right? But here there's that antibonding node, right? So fluoride will come off. You'll make and break. And notice, this is exactly the same reaction as the one with HF. Right? It's just that CH3 is playing the role that H played before. Yeah, Mike?
So, you said that the reason why the F breaks off in the first one is because it's an antibody node, and when the OH comes in, it's more favorable to...
It's not... It's actually when the electrons go into that orbital. When the you're right, they come from OH. But the crucial thing is that you're putting electrons into the antibonding orbital. When there were no electrons there, who cared what energy it had? Now that there are electrons in there, they will be lower in energy if the F moves away from the H or away from the CH3.
But aren't there also lower energy orbitals of the molecule that are not antibonding? They're like the, for example, the P orbitals that have that do favor the H and the F staying together.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Enough to constitute a single bond. And they were the ones we looked at the bottom right over there. One that was mostly the 2s orbital of F, one that was mostly a 2p orbital of F, each with, a little bit of a lump of hydrogen on it. Right? But they weren't really strong bonds because they were mostly on F, not much on H, because of the energy mismatch. So it wasn't a really strong bond. Now when you put electrons in the antibond, it overcomes that.
Why can't the
are to keep the electrons going in OH as well as F? Is it just a matter of the new electrons?
Well, the electrons are much lower in energy when they're on an isolated F atom than they would be on the next. If you took this methanol and tried to put another pair of electrons in it, they'd go into a very high energy orbital. There's a much lower energy orbital here than there is here. Yeah.
Oh.
And part of that was that at the very beginning, when it was CH3F, the electrons that were shared between fluorine and methyl were mostly on the fluorine to begin with, so now they're all on the fluorine. Yeah.
Is there an antibond orbital in OH minus that has from which the electrons are transferred?
No, it's an unshared pair.
It's an unshared pair?
Yeah.
So then why would they even go to the antibond orbital?
Because it's an unusually low vacant orbital for the reasons we talked about, and the ones on OH minus are unusually high because they're unshared and because there's a negative charge. That's the stuff we talked about last time. Okay, so that reaction on the right, you may have seen if you've looked at a little bit of organic chemistry, is called SN2 substitution. But in fact, if you wanted to, it's the same reaction as the one on the left. And you could call that one on the left, you could call it SN2 substitution at hydrogen rather than at carbon. Right? It's the same reaction. Sagar?
So I see why that, if I saw on the right, why that's an antibody node between the fluorine and the carbon.
Yeah.
Why isn't the other node considered an antibody node?
Because it's not between the nuclei. It's just it's an atomic orbital of carbon. You can't have carbon come apart into two pieces.
Like, don't you have so why aren't the hydrogen nuclei?
Because that node doesn't involve a mixture of the hydrogen orbitals with the carbon. It's just the carbon orbital. You can see that it's a p orbital of carbon. Right? It's not being distorted out a lot onto the hydrogens. So it's not strong. It might be slightly antibonding if we looked in real detail with at a different contour. Maybe there's a little bit of hydrogen in it, but not much. And I actually don't know whether the hydrogen that's there is bonding or antibonding with the carbon.
So the criteria for being an antibonding node is like you have to be in orbit with the carbon atom or the hydrogen atom.
It has to be an orbital that would get lower in energy if atoms went apart. Okay? That one, the one on the right, doesn't change in energy when the atoms move apart because it's just carbon. But the one on the left that involves overlap between fluorine and carbon, that one will get lower in energy when they move apart. Okay. Now, here's a more complicated one, ethyl fluoride. Okay, so ethyl methyl sounds pretty similar. Should be the same reaction again. There's the LUMO of ethyl fluoride. Now it looks much more complicated than these others. Okay, now this LUMO is in fact the favorable mixture. It's a vacant orbital. It's the favorable mixture of two other vacant orbitals. Two sigma star orbitals. Can you see what two sigma star orbitals came together to make this? I'll give you a hint. What's that? What orbital is that? There is a sigma star CH, Sagar, right? Here's H, here's carbon, there's a node between them. That's the sigma star of CH. Right? Sigma star CH. Let's suppose it has that energy. It's antibonding CH. Now, what's the other part of this thing? The part that's on the top? Caitlin? Compare this with this. The sizes are a little different. But it's the same thing, right? It's an antibond between fluorine and carbon. That's sigma star CF. Where should we put it? If I'm going to put sigma star CF here, and I'm going to show it on an energy diagram, should it be above this or below this? Sigma star CF versus sigma star CH. Shirley? It's going to be down. Now, do you see why it's down? It's because you mixed C and H up and down, or you mixed C and F just a little bit up and down, right? So that CF sigma star is going to be lower, yeah.
Is there any way to tell the difference between the nodes if we don't have these pictures?
Yeah, you get familiar with it after a while. But you could probably figure this out, actually. But it would take you a little while. Okay? Now, so there, but notice it's the favorable mixture of those two. The one on the top and the one on the bottom. There's no node between the top and the bottom. You see that? Red matches red, blue matches blue. So when these two vacant or localized sigma star vacant orbitals came together and mixed, because they're close to one another, right? We got two new orbitals, both of which are vacant. But this is the lower one, the favorable mixture of the two. Okay? So that's what this complicated orbital is, a favorable combination of sigma star CH and sigma star CF. Okay? Now, how's it going to react? Well, it looks a little bit like the one on the top, so we could imagine having an SN2 substitution there, right? Just like the reaction on top, top right. That's a possibility, but what's the problem? You've got the bottom there too. That's going to get in the way. And notice it has the wrong sign. If the orbital that's coming in here overlaps with that favorably, it'll overlap with that unfavorably. So that's not good. If you were going to do that, you should do it this way. Attack from up there to do a reaction like the one on the top. Okay? But there's another. Is there any place else you could imagine attacking this LUMO? Matthew? Well, you could, but you're not going to get much overlap with that. It's too small. Any other idea, Matthew?
From the right.
Attack the H. Okay? So you could imagine doing either this or that. And the question is, which one? Well, we know what would happen if you attacked here. You'd put OH attached to this carbon and the fluoride would leave. That's the same reaction up at the top. What would happen if it overlapped with this? Now, as to which one's going to win, that's lore, right? You're going to have to do the experiment. But anyhow, there are these two possibilities. Okay, but one possibility is you can get by just looking at this orbital. Now, with respect to whether this orbital is obvious, it's not so obvious. Even if you do the calculation, it turns out that that orbital I drew there is not the LUMO. It's fairly low, but it's not the lowest vacant orbital. But I made it the LUMO, and the way I made it the LUMO was by stretching that bond and stretching that bond a little bit. That changed the energies of the orbitals, and then this was the LUMO if I stretched those two. Now let's think about this. So the OH minus is going to come up in this arrow here and make a bond here, right? Now, let's look at, there's an antibonding orbital there. So what's that going to do? It's going to break that bond. Okay, so where are those electrons in this CH bond? Where are they going to go? Okay, well now let's look a little bit further along. Here's a node. Is that an antibonding node? No, that's a node made by the orbitals of the carbons. It goes through the nuclei, it's not through the bond. Right? So in fact, if you put electrons in this orbital, what effect is it going to have on the interaction between these two carbons? Is it going to make it stronger or weaker? Is it going to be bonding or antibonding between these two carbons? It's going to be bonding. It's going to strengthen that bond. right, if you put electrons in this LUMO. It's going to weaken this bond, the antibonding, break it, but it's going to strengthen this interaction through this overlap and this overlap. Right? So we're going to draw our curve. So that's pi bonding between the two carbons. So we're going to put those electrons that were in the CH bond in between the two carbons. Okay? Now, there's one more relevant node, which is there, that's antibonding. The last node here is just part of the fluorine p orbital, right? But there's an antibonding node. What does that mean if we put electrons in this orbital? Richard? Weakens what? What will happen? Yeah, the fluoride will come off, right? Like that. So there's the reaction that's going to occur. We're going to pull H off one carbon, and fluoride is going to fly off the other carbon, and we're going to generate a double bond. And that reaction is called E2 elimination. We'll study it next semester, right? But indeed, it's essentially the same reaction as these others, or very similar. It just has one more antibonding node. So, in this case, you make two new bonds and break two bonds. Right, you break CH, you break CF, you form OH, and you form the second bond of CC to make a double bond. Sagar?
I just have a quick question. It's the sigma star. Can you write that in terms of S and
P? Yeah, this one is a mixture of an S orbital here, a P orbital here, a P orbital here, and a P orbital here, mostly. Right, but what we did over here when I had the diagram here was first we put this one together with this one and this one together with this one to make sigma star CH, sigma star CF, and then we put those two together to make this that had all four in it. So our analysis went pairwise, right? This pair, that pair, and then take those two and put them together as a new pair. So that there are four atomic orbitals mostly in that.
So sigma star just means LUMO?
You don't call this orbital sigma star. It's get too complicated to use that name. You just call this the LUMO. And it's the LUMO if you stretch this bond a little and stretch this bond a little. But the pieces you made of were smaller pieces, which were sigma star CH and sigma star CF. Okay? Sharif?
Sorry, why do we stretch the bonds again?
To make that the LUMO. That sounds like I'm cheating, right? But in fact, it's not unreasonable because atoms are vibrating all the time. And during a certain phase of vibration, this will be the LUMO. And if the OH minus comes up at that time, bingo, you got the reaction. Okay, now let's look at the oxidation, as it's called, I put it in quotes, of ammonia, NH3 by chlorine. So there's the balanced equation. You take three molecules of ammonia and a molecule of Cl2 and you get hydrazinium hydrochloride, that's the stuff on the left, and ammonium chloride. Right? It's called oxidation. So the main thing is you've established a nitrogen-nitrogen bond. But let's see if we can understand this in terms of how the HOMOs and LUMOs do it. Okay, so with the starting material, where do you have a high HOMO, unusually high HOMO? Don? Yeah, so you got NH3 with its unshared pair. And sometimes you denote an unshared pair as N. That's just a notation that's used sometimes. Okay, so there's our high HOMO. What do we have for an unusually low LUMO in the starting materials? What in Cl2? What's the LUMO? Very close. It's not the bond. It's the antibond that's low, right? Sigma star. Good. Okay, so the low LUMO is CCl, sigma star. Okay, so now we're going to mix these two, right? So the nitrogen is going to come in and put its electrons between nitrogen and chlorine. And at the same time, we're going to that's an antibonding orbital of chlorine, so it's going to weaken. Chloride's going to go away. Okay, so there we go. And we've got one of the products we want. At the far right is ammonium chloride, and we got the chloride. Okay, check that one off. Okay, now, we also have this. Now, we need another HOMO, another LUMO. Which do you think this has? An unusually high HOMO or unusually low LUMO? Why? Why do you say LUMO? It's got a positive charge. That's going to make electrons stable or vacant orbital stable. So it's got a low LUMO. What is the low LUMO? Incidentally, that's not the only reason it's low. It's also got big nuclear charges, right? Chlorine and nitrogen. So there are lots of reasons this is going to be low. Now, which atom is it going to... Which particular bond should be low? Which sigma star of this thing is going to be very low? Yeah. Right, between chlorine and nitrogen. However, if you attack that, if you attack on chlorine, you're going to go back to the starting material. Or if you bring, say NCl is our low sigma star NCl. Okay? Now, but there's also NH. Sigma star NH would also be unusually low, not as low as NCl. But now, what's the HOMO we're going to attack with? Ryan? Right, we got another NH3. Right, there are three of them we're coming in with. So we've got NH3 to do the attacking. Now suppose we use the NH3 to attack chlorine. What's going to happen? You get the same product as starting material. Right? It's just exchanging chlorine between two ammonia. So it happens, I'm sure it happens, but you don't know it happens. So when it attacks the hydrogen, however, you get something different. So now you're moving on. So that's what we'll do. So you do there, and now the bond will go on to become an unshared pair of nitrogen rather than break the NCl. Okay? So now we got that, and we got another one of the products. Right? We've got the NH4 now. And we have this other piece, ClNH2. Okay? Now, do we have a low LUMO here? Unusually low LUMO. We don't have the positive charge anymore. What would you identify as an unusually low LUMO here? Yeah, Henry? Yeah, as you go down the periodic table, you get worse and worse overlap. So there's not such good overlap between chlorine and nitrogen as there would be between most of the things we've been talking about. Victor? This one up here? Would that have a low LUMO?
No.
Yeah. Okay. So anyhow, sigma star NCl is now a good candidate. How about a high HOMO? You know, this nitrogen has an unshared pair of electrons. Unusually high? Well, it's unshared pair, but it's got chlorine around there. So it's not. There's a better unshared pair. Brian, what is it? No, you know. You told me before. Ah, we got three of them, right? So we got another one. So now we're going to do that. Right, attack the sigma star NCl, chloride will leave, and we got that, which is the last product. Right, so we went through three stages of doing what's essentially the same reaction at every stage, attack a sigma star with an unshared pair of nitrogen. Right, so there's the last product. Okay, so there are three cycles of this make and break simultaneously. Right. The NH3 attacks chlorine, then it attacks hydrogen, then it attacks a nitrogen atom. But it's really the same make and break reaction every time.
So is the reason that the Cl and bond is low, is that because the high nuclear charges are both chlorine and nitrogen?
Plus there's not such good overlap with chlorine. It's got high nuclear charges, right? Which means it's going to start low, and not such good overlap, which means the vacant orbital, sigma star, is not going to go up so high. So on both counts, this is going to be low.
Is it because the p orbitals, there are p
It's because the orbitals on chlorine are very big. So they go out all over, and they're not so much of it where it needs to be to overlap. Okay, so now we're going to look at four functional groups today and Monday. And this is essentially going to finish us up with quantum mechanics. There will be life after quantum mechanics, but this is the payoff, right? Okay, so we're going to look at carbonyl, then amide, then carboxylic acid, then alkyl lithium. And in fact, there are lots of other... And then we'll do something completely different. We'll see. We'll go to reality then and see how people really discovered this stuff without quantum mechanics, right? But in order to round out your understanding of functional groups, what you're going to do is go to that page of the functional groups that we had earlier on and pick one and analyze it the way I've been analyzing these, right? And you're going to do a wiki on it. The wikis exist from last year. You're going to modify it. Some of them aren't so good, so there's scope for making them better. Okay, so there'll be plenty to do. And so at midnight next Wednesday. So there'll be two people for each functional group. So you can go enter your name to be one on. So the quicker you go there, the more selection you get on functional group. If you're last, you take whatever's left over. Mike?
How will you move to determine like the orbital shapes of LUMOs that we don't have a computer to do it?
If you want, you can come to my office and I'll help you. But my guess is that you'll be able to think through a lot of it. It's not as complicated as that ethyl fluoride. Yeah.
Can you go back to like the two slides, the one about the oxidation
fluoride? Let's do it later, okay? Because I do want to get to the carbonyl here. Or can you tell me what the question was?
I think there's a discrepancy between the slide that we have.
Okay, well, download the new one. Okay. Here's the carbonyl group. This is arguably the most important functional group in all of organic chemistry. And the reason is that it's a very strong bond, but it's also very reactive. That seems an oxymoron, doesn't it? How can it be both strong and reactive? But it is, and we'll see. Okay, so it's got six valence pairs of electrons. And there are the occupied molecular orbitals. The lowest one is, if we did the plum pudding analysis on it, that's 2s, 2px, py, pz, 3s, and 3d, xy. Okay? But we're going to look at the top four of them in more detail. Okay, looking at pairwise mixing the way we've been talking about lately. So let's look at the HOMO. Okay, here's a picture made with a different program, drawn at a different contour level, and you'll see soon why different contour levels can make things look different. But this picture is good for our purposes. What does it look like mostly, the HOMO? It's mostly a p orbital on oxygen, right? An unshared pair on oxygen, you'd say, if you had to give it a really simple name. But it's got a little bit of the other stuff. Now let's compare it with this one, which looks like that. What's that mostly? It's CH bonds. But there's a little bit of a P orbital on oxygen. In fact, these have that same node there. Is that an anti-bonding node? Or is it an atomic orbital node? It's atomic orbital, right? It's the same things that it's the node of, right? And there's another node in the top one. Is that anti-bonding or is it... Or is it an atomic orbital node, the pink one? That's antibonding. It goes through the CO bond, okay? Now, notice that these two things are the sum and the difference of mismatched things, right? This one is the sum of the two. It's bonding between the right and the left. This one is antibonding between the right and the left. But these come as a pair, right? The sum and the difference. Okay, now, which is higher, the 2p orbital on oxygen or sigma CH? Which is higher in energy? Henry?
Sigma CH, since we have
any previous... Sigma CH is higher in energy?
No, it's lower. It's 2PO.
Okay. And let's see if this is your analysis. 2PO is going to be low because of the nuclear charge being high, a lot of protons. sigma CH is going to be low because of the overlap and the bond that's been formed. So if we take the atomic orbitals, they look like that. If we mix carbon and hydrogen, we get that. And the question, as it was before, is which is lower, the sigma CH or the oxygen? And we can tell by which one dominates in the favorable combination of these two. So if we put these two together, right, we find that the favorable one looks much more like CH than it does like oxygen. Look here, this one's all, the favorable one is all CH. The unfavorable one's almost all oxygen. So the 2p of oxygen is much higher. And that doesn't surprise you, because we just saw a short time ago that the 2pf is a little bit higher, although only a little bit, than CH. So oxygen is naturally higher. We're going to stop there. That got through the first wiki. There were two wikis in this slide. There's more to go, which is going to be analysis of this orbital. So you don't have to do that one until next time.
I didn't quite understand. Why did stretching of the bonds create a closed occupied orbital?
It made that... If you stretch bonds where an orbital is anti-bonding, that makes the orbital lower in energy, makes the electrons lower in energy. Right? That's what anti-bonding is. The electrons get lower in energy, they move apart. So by stretching those bonds, and where it was anti-bonding, I made it a little lower in energy, and then it was the lowest. It wasn't very high before, but I needed a little tweak to make it really the lowest, so I could say it was the lowest.
So when we have two kinds of orbitals, one with an anti-bonding orbital and then the other with just the bonding, is the anti-bonding the unfavorable one when in comparison? Because
if you mix two things, right. The lowest one goes down, they go down and up.
Right.
This one's bonding, this one's anti-bonding.
Okay, and that would be represented by like those two orbitals, like the shape of frontier. The top one would be one of those, and then the.
Yeah, this of the things that went into these two, this is the favorable, and that's the unfavorable combination. Yeah, Mustafa?
I had a question about the LUMO reaction analogies. So when you have the lowest unoccupied molecular orbital, that is a way the molecule could have its electron distribution.
Right? It's where some other electrons would be happy enough to go if they were high enough.
So like when you have an antibonding node in one of those, I guess the question is, does a molecule have only one orbital at a time?
It has only one LUMO unless it happens to be degenerate. The two happen to have the same energy.
I mean, not one LUMO, but... So you have the HOMO, which is...
For many purposes...
I guess I'm not really sure what I'm describing. But, so if there's a LUMO and you add more electrons, they go to the LUMO, right? And that's the
easiest place to put more electrons, the LUMO.
And that's why if there's an antibonding node, it breaks a bond or it weakens.
And if you put electrons in and it's antibonding, then that bond weakens or even breaks.
So does that mean that when there are added electrons, the LUMO becomes the new orbital for the molecule?
Oh yeah, it becomes the problem. It might be the HOMO. It might even be not the HOMO. It might be lower. When you put electrons in, it's not an UMO anymore, an unoccupied.
Yeah.
It's an OMO.
Okay. So when you show those pictures of all the possible occupied molecular orbitals, are they all simultaneous, or is it?
Oh yeah, because there are lots of different electrons. There are seven electron pairs. Seven orbitals are occupied, but they're an infinite number of orbitals, right? So you could put more and more electrons in until it becomes more favorable for electrons to be off in interstellar space rather than there. Once the thing begins to acquire a lot of negative charge, it's easier to be off in interstellar space.
Okay.
So you can't just keep adding ones, but you could put it in this orbital or in this orbital, or in this orbital, or in this orbital among the vacant ones.
So if you have like a molecule that has, for example, one occupied orbital, and then you have the LUMO has an antibonding node that goes through part of that orbital, you add the next two, what happens to the first one?
Yeah, well, that's like the one that goes off, if I understood you, the one that goes off with the fluorine. Like you have a carbon fluorine bond, mm-hmm. right? The electrons shared between carbon and fluorine, mm-hmm. right? If you make the fluorine go away by putting electrons in another orbital that's antibonding there, it'll go away, but it'll take those electrons because those electrons were mostly on the fluorine to begin with, the ones that were in the fluorine hydrogen or fluorine carbon bond. They were mostly. So when the fluorine goes away, it takes those electrons.
So
that's that second curved arrow, right?
Yeah. So that orbital like disappears, or does it completely change?
It becomes an atomic orbital of fluoride in that case.
Okay, I think I get it. Thanks.
Good.
Hey, sir, just looking for where we have the assignments on the functional groups. The wikis on the functional groups.
Go back to home.
Okay.
Home.
And there.
Functional group analysis. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. A quick question. So with the reaction that you ran through at the end, why was the Cl and why was that a low LUMO?
The NCl bond?
Yeah, the N and the
has a low LUMO because compared to what? Compared to CH or CC. So both the nuclei that make that bond have a lot of protons in them.
Yes,
right?
Both.
Nitrogen is lower than carbon. Chlorine's lower than carbon. And furthermore, so if they had the same overlap, the LUMO wouldn't be as high as the LUMO from carbon. Carbon-carbon.
Okay.
But it actually doesn't have quite as good an overlap either, so it's really lower.
Okay. And then,
how does it contribute to lowering?
Compared to what, right? Normally you take two orbitals, atomic orbitals, you mix them. According to the overlap, they go up and down. Here's the LUMO, the vacant orbital, right? If you didn't have such good overlap, they wouldn't go up and down as far.
Right. Oh.
So it would be a lower LUMO than the one with better overlap.
So it's because it's antibonding.
We're talking about the vacant orbitals, right?
What? Yeah.
The LUMOs, not the HOMOs.
Why weren't the... So, what makes it unoccupied? How do you know that there are no electrons in it?
Because I counted up how many electrons there were and started putting them in the bottom until I ran out of electrons. Then they become vacant.
Okay, and then... So, basically, after you count the number of electrons you have, you just have to look for an orbital that's low?
Yeah, the lowest one is the best. In that particular case of ethyl fluoride that I showed you, it actually wasn't the lowest one. But if I stretched those bonds a little bit, then it was lowest. So that's what I did in order to show it to you and be able to say it was the lowest.
Okay, and you know that it's not the CH. See, and then in the second part of the reaction, it was CH, right? That was the LUMO.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean, CH. You mean the ethyl fluoride, the big one, the complicated orbital?
Yeah, no. In the last reaction, there was
time
there was NH3. The second time NH3 attacked the product of the first time. That was the CH3, right?
Yeah, it attacked on the... There was no carbon in that altogether. There was NH.
Okay, so what was the LUMO in that one?
It was the NC bond, the sigma star, CL. NCL sigma star is the LUMO, and we just talked about why it was low.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, great, thank you.
Good. How are you? Yeah, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Hi.
We have
a chemistry. She was an undergrad
in the 70s.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
Way back then.
So this is quite a surprise. This is the first time I've had someone who was a son of somebody in the class.
Because I know other
offspring have come to Yale, but I didn't realize they had taken, taken your class.
This is the first time, so that was fun to know that.
Right. I mean, when he was looking last year, you know, looking through the catalog, it caught my eye that you were still teaching the class.
Yeah. Now we urge Kevin, take your.
But it's a little different from what it was when you took it.
It is different. I mean, so obviously some of the things are the same, but it, the way you describe it is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's changed over the years.
Yeah.
Because you were in the mid 70s?
This is 74.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's back a ways.
Understanding, I guess the way it was described is different, right?
Just
the level of understanding.
Yeah, we do a lot of quantum mechanics now.
Yeah.
That's great. It's terrific that you're still teaching this class.
Yeah, it's a fun class to teach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I got to turn my recorder off here just a second.